Swagalicious swooners, seven slushy schlitzes on a sultry summer Sunday. So sinfully sweet. This is Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 160, and I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your brainy, breathing brontosauruses with no bronchitis.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
All true.
All true.
Yeah.
All right, and this episode is sponsored by Warby Parker, which is a revolutionary way to get cool prescription or non-prescription glasses and sunglasses that's hassle-free, fun, and super affordable and stylish. This is how it works. You go online to warbyparker.com, and you can pick up to five glasses or the frames that you would like to try on. They ship all your sample frames in a cool box to your house for free, and you try them on and you decide whether if the fit's right or if you look awesome. Send back the samples in a special pre-stamped box and then order the pair you want online after filling in or uploading your prescription info. Their glasses are super, super stylish and brainy, and they start at just $95, and that's frames and lenses.
That's a real good deal.
Very good deal. And so please visit warbyparker.com/brain and order some home try-ons and ultimately pick the ones for your final purchase and get expedited shipping. That's warbyparker.com/brain. So like many other recording days or Sundays, I usually have a race in the morning. So I would run the race and then come to record. During the races, all of the runners get like a race bib that has your number. And so they can take photos of you, and they can sort the numbers, and also has a timing
tell
chip.
Tell if you're cheating.
Yeah, tell if you're cheating. Yeah. It's really the anti-cheating mechanism. Mm-hmm. You pick up your bib, it has four holes, and they give you four safety pins, and you pin it onto your shirt. And that has not changed. They haven't done a crazy adhesive, you know, or anything.
There's like chips in there now. They're computerized.
Well, not
still,
in the pins, but on
not
the bib.
Not on the thing, But you
and
still
I was like,
pin it to yourself.
At home, I started kind of like you gathering all
it,
my
right?
bibs together. Yeah. Four safety pins per bib.
Uh-huh.
And
a lot of
say
pins.
I run maybe 52 races a year times four. Like I just have like a so pile. A pile of safety pins. I was like, man, the racing industry is really keeping the safety pin industry like alive. That and the laundromat.
They're like, we lost the diaper industry. We got to find.
Exactly. I think like old comic books with like, you know, cartoons where they have like the baby and they always put the cloth diaper and they put a safety pin
right.
on it. I was like, this seems like a really unsafe thing. You know,
well, it was to be safer.
To be safer than, say,
just a pin without a...
Oh, a pin without a clasp.
Yeah.
Safety pin. Really interesting. It was invented mostly to pay off a debt.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like hard up for money.
Got to invent something.
Yeah. That's exactly what it was. That's exactly what it was.
Walter Hunt, he owed his friend $15. And one day he's like, okay, well, I gotta invent something to just make the money, you know, to pay. And this is like, you know, turn of the century.
Brilliant.
And so he took brass wire, he coiled it, and then he made like a clasp so that the coil gives it a bounciness.
Yeah.
He sold the patent. He got the patent and he sold the patent to the W.R. Grace & Company for $400.
Oh.
Roughly about $10,000.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Himself out of any future royalties.
Using that $400 ruse, he paid $15 to his friend.
Okay.
And then he kept the $385 to himself. W.R. Grace & Company is now millions of dollars in the safety pin industry.
Yeah.
Wow.
Helping runners like me keep their anti-cheating bibs on their bodies.
Interesting.
The end.
Yeah. I like how he's like, oh, I got to make some money. I'm going to just make an image.
It's just that easy.
It's so turn of the century.
Yeah. Something.
Yeah. /I'm a dentist/I'm a this. Like, they're everywhere.
Right. Well, you didn't need a lot of schooling for a lot of things back in those days.
You just need a good idea. All right. Yeah. That was fun.
You need a pair of pliers and a dream in your heart.
Yeah. Right.
You too can be a dentist.
And a debt.
To really fuel fuel you.
Right. To really light the flame under your butt, which was how a lot of dentistry was done.
Yeah, it was. You got to keep it sanitized.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hot Shot. And I have a random Trivial Pursuit card here from Genus 4.
All right.
Okay. Yeah.
Back to real Trivial Pursuit cards.
Oh, man. Last week's episode, that was some painful stuff. Yeah.
Forte.
the less said about that, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys want to play some unfun trivia? No, here we're back to nerd fun. All right. Here we go. Buzzers ready, please.
Okay.
Blue Edge for People and Places. What country has the most seats in the European Parliament? Keep in mind, this card is old.
Right.
And I think before EU.
Oh, maybe? Okay. Okay.
I'm not sure.
What country has the most seats in the European... Okay.
Chris.
I don't know. Russia?
Incorrect.
Germany.
It is Germany.
Oh, okay.
Good job.
I assume it's based on population.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know.
What?
Don't
the card doesn't say.
Don't know.
You know what?
You can right. look it up.
All right.
You have Wikipedia too. Pink Wedge for Arts and Entertainment. What Steven Spielberg movie premiere in Vienna was passed up by Kurt Waldheim?
Oh.
Chris.
Schindler's List?
Correct. Yellow for History. What office must you hold to grace the bottom right side of the dollar bill with your signature? Colin.
Is that the Secretary of the Treasury?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's do Brown Wedge for Science and Nature. What bean comes in Ethiopian, Kenyan, Puerto Rican, and Sumatran varieties? Everybody!
Coffee. The human bean. This is before, like, Sumatra was, like, the buzzword of every
right.
coffee
yeah.
in Starbucks,
right,
too.
Right.
Yeah.
Green Wedge for Sports and Leisure. How many of every 10 viewers watch the Super Bowl from outside the U.S.?
Oh.
How many of every 10?
From outside the U.S.?
Can't be that many.
Colin.
Four.
This is dated.
Four out of every 10. 40%.
Incorrect.
No, not in one out of every 10.
No.
Two.
Nine.
What?
What?
I knew it was high. I didn't know it was
almost
that high.
The whole world.
Wow.
For the halftime show? I don't know.
It's a spectacle.
I guess so.
Yeah,
Wait, say that again. What was it?
How many of every 10 viewers watch the Super Bowl from outside
the U.S.? Yeah, I guess the halftime
expats.
Show would be so big that,
of all the people in the world watching it,
yeah.
what percentage are outside?
I just didn't
only 10%.
I just didn't figure that many people watched
it outside
of America.
That's still a lot higher.
I think they were like, billions of people watch or
right.
something
well,
like that.
Well, I guess based on the fact of the halftime show, I guess a lot of people would watch it. Yeah.
All right, last question, wild card. What Georgia novelist correctly predicted, quote, "I am going to die in a car crash. I feel certain of this."
Oh, yeah.
Creepy. It's a lady.
Yep, yep. Georgia. Oh, my God.
It has alliteration in her name.
Yeah.
Whoa. Fanny Flagg? No.
Is that a real person?
Yeah.
Fried
Green Tomatoes.
No,
but
it's older than that.
Yeah. Also still
Margaret Mitchell.
Margaret Mitchell. Okay. I was thinking that. Okay. I was like, alliteration. Is that a person?
That sounds like a person.
Gone with the Wind, right?
Oh.
Okay.
That lady.
Yes, that lady.
I wonder when she died, because there was very high fatality rate.
Oh, with
cars.
Car crashes?
Yeah.
Just because of like the lack of safety?
Yeah, and people didn't know how to do it. I mean, there were all sorts of reasons why that was bad. The cars were crappy, all sorts. Yeah.
All right, good job, Brains. Today, episode 106, you know what that means. Every fifth episode of Good Job, Brain, we don't have a theme or a topic. We prepare our own random quizzes for each other and for you guys, listeners, to play along, to quiz along. So today, get ready for All Quiz Bonanza number 32.
I will start us off. I have a quiz for you guys called Literally Speaking. And the inspiration for this, Karen, came from a few episodes ago. We were talking about the flagship. Do you remember this?
Yeah, because I was like, that's what the flagship store is named after, a ship that has flags.
So I have a quiz for you guys that's all about words that today we almost exclusively use by their metaphorical meaning, some later meaning. And I want you to tell me what is the literal, or by which I mean the original meaning of this word before we started using this word metaphorically.
I just saw somebody, I think it was on Twitter, it might have been a friend of mine or might have just been somebody on Twitter saying like, yeah, my daughter just asked me, why do we say hang up the phone?
Yeah,
and I was like,
Oh, no.
That's a, that's a good one.
So this will be a buzzer quiz. Get your guys' buzzers ready. So we'll do a sample question here. So I might say the largest or most important store in a retail chain is often referred to as the flagship store. Literally speaking, what is a flagship?
Gotcha.
And you would say...
it's a ship with flags on it.
Yeah. And you know,
lead with ship. That one?
Okay. More specifically, they say it's the like the admiral's flag. You know, it would be like whatever ship is in charge of the, the fleet. Right. So here we go. Get your buzzers ready.
Okay.
When you are working on a large or lengthy project, you'll often talk about major steps in the process as milestones. Literally speaking, what is a milestone? Karen.
It is a stone indicating an actual mile of distance.
That's right.
On a trip.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. It'd be almost always stone off on the side of the road, 30 miles to London or, you know, whatever distance you're traveling to. You'll often
That's pretty easy quiz.
Well, you know, like a lot of these quizzes, they ramp up in difficulty. Well, listen to Karen after After one question, she's all in. All right.
This is a dumb quiz.
All right, Karen.
All right, here we go.
Get back to me in four questions, Karen.
Dumb quiz.
You'll often hear the leader of a criminal organization called a kingpin. If you're a Marvel Comics fan, you also know the kingpin. Literally speaking, what is a kingpin? Karen.
It is the pin most in front of bowling.
Incorrect.
That's what you thought too?
That's what I thought too, yeah. But
you're in the right ballpark, but that is not the correct answer.
Is it with bowling alley?
Oh, is it the pin that's in the position that's right in the middle so that...
Should we get out of the bowling metaphor entirely?
I'll just tell you the answer. How about that?
Oh, okay.
Kingpin comes from the game of Kales, K-A-Y-L-E-S, which was a kind of a really early proto-bowling, you know, 9-pin, 10-pin kind of game.
Yeah.
And in Kales, you would have a row of 9 pins set in a row. Mm-hmm. The one in the middle would be taller than the rest, and that is the kingpin. Yeah. And the goal of the game is to... there are various rules about knocking the pins over.
So Karen was basically correct.
Yeah.
She was about as right as anybody was going to get.
You're pretty close.
If we don't have any Kales players
You're pretty close. Well, I mean, the thing to note is that in bowling, they're all the same size.
Yeah.
It's not just the one in front. It's bigger than the rest.
Right. Well, if there was one that was bigger than the rest,
yes,
that would be the kingpin.
That would be the kingpin.
Yep.
Okay.
Queen Elizabeth II, if you prefer, is nominally the head of state of the United Kingdom and the Commonwealth. But in reality, she's what we call a figurehead ruler. Mm-hmm. She has no actual governing power, like the Emperor of Japan as well.
Okay.
Literally speaking, what is a figurehead?
Yeah.
Chris.
I believe it's the thing on the front of a ship. That might be metaphorical also, but a figurehead on the front of the ship, like a mermaid.
Absolutely correct.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. The bust or a full figure,
often of a
woman or a female mermaid of some type. Carved onto the front of a ship.
Left up to the designer.
Yes. Frequently seen
boobs.
in many pirate movies. Right. Sure. Yeah. Whether she's topless or not tells you who the audience of that particular entertainment is.
You're going to talk about the queen, whether she's topless or not. She's the figurehead.
That's between the queen and her people. That's
wow, so progressive.
Writers and historians will often talk of watershed moments. Watershed moments, meaning a crucial turning point or a major event. Like this was a watershed moment for the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
Literally speaking, what is a watershed?
I've never heard of this word.
Chris.
Is it a part of a dam that you can like lower to let water through the dam? Or like you know,
interesting. No, that's not quite right. No,
okay,
no.
Okay.
water shelter? What is it?
Watershed.
Mm-hmm. Watershed. It is. It's related to geography and topology.
Something to do with landslides or
Watershed is essentially the line on which all of the water on one side flows in one direction to an ocean or a basin, and all the water on the other side flows in another direction to another basin. So if you have a river on one side of the watershed and a river on the other side of a watershed, they will go in opposite directions.
Yeah.
So the metaphorical meaning of a watershed moment is like, all right, here we are. Everything before us is one way of the world, and everything coming after us is a different way of the world.
Cool.
Yeah. So pretty easy, Karen? Yeah?
Is it?
I still don't understand
river.
How that... But it's okay. It's fine. I'll look it up. Like, I can't picture the...
So imagine... So for example, like, the Continental Divide in the United States, right? The Continental Divide, all the rivers on one side flow into the Pacific, all the rivers on the other side flow into the Atlantic. If a person or an organization is the last to stand for something, you may hear them described as the bastion. You might say North Korea is the last bastion of communism, or the BBC is the last bastion of proper English. I'm not passing, you know, judgment on either of those statements, by the way. Literally speaking, what is a bastion? Chris.
It's a feature of a castle, or it's a stronghold.
I will accept that. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. A bastion it's on a castle or a fortress. It's an outcropping specifically on the outer perimeter. And they're almost always five-sided, you know, one side being against the castle. And the idea is with the angles, you can set up, you know, your archers or whomever to defend any angle of attack. You can attack people scaling the walls, coming at you from over the hill. And so if you're down to your last bastion, you know, it's sort of a holdout there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a shed for water.
It's where you keep your water.
Last one. If we say someone is a stickler for etiquette or a real stickler for the details, we mean that not only do they know a lot about it, but they want to make sure that you know that you're doing it the right way. Literally speaking, what is a stickler?
Literally speaking.
I didn't know that was
the original meaning of the word. What is a stickler?
I think of a stick and a tickler,
or like
someone who pokes
someone. Burrs those weeds.
I will. This is a very old word. There was a verb to stickle. To stickle.
Oh.
The stickler was the one who stickled.
Let's bring that back.
A stickler was, in the original sense, a referee or an umpire.
Oh.
And so you might have like a fencing competition or a boxing match. You would want somebody to be, you know, the impartial judge or the ref, you know, the moderator. So the stickler would be the person who would decide upon the rules, would decide like, you're not abiding by the rules. This is the winner. And the idea of sort of enforcing other people's behavior, like hyper-correctly enforcing other people's behavior, is the one that sort of carried through. Yeah.
No one uses...
Stickle.
Not anymore, right.
Like we call them a referee, like officially for games and stuff.
It's a very old word, right. But you could, if you want to...
But they were official.
Yeah.
That's the meaning.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Good job, guys.
Cool.
Hey, all right.
I came across a list of CNN's top 50 American dishes.
Okay.
Like iconic American dishes. Not just America as a whole, but regional. There's like sourdough bread and there's jambalaya and stuff.
Okay.
And so I have some cool questions about some of these American-y food.
All right.
Okay.
So it is a write down quiz. So everybody get your pads and pens ready. And I want to start with something we've talked about a little bit before, but I love the fact that there's so many regional varieties. Clam chowder.
Chowder.
I'm going to list. So clam chowder, we probably know the New England clam chowder the best, which is the white creamy ones.
Yeah.
There are many, many regional versions. Okay. I'm going to read them out and please write down what you think. What are the ingredients
is the thing
that makes it different? Ingredient or style or whatever of these different ones.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, so we know New England clam chowder. Manhattan clam chowder. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Rhode Island clam chowder. New Jersey clam chowder.
Whoa.
Delaware clam chowder. And one last one. Menorcan clam chowder.
Menorcan?
Like Menorca?
Menorcan.
Okay.
Menorcan style.
Okay.
But it's U.S. These are all U.S. foods. M-I-N-O-R-C-A-N.
Huh.
Don't know what that is. Okay.
Delaware. I'm still all stuck on Delaware.
So we know New England. What is Manhattan clam chowder? Rhode Island clam chowder, New Jersey clam chowder, Delaware clam chowder, and Menorcan clam chowder.
All right.
I think we're all going to get like at least one.
Okay. Yeah. So Manhattan clam chowder. Everybody is correct. It is red. Mm. It's made out of tomato. It's not a creamy base.
Mm-hmm.
And Rhode Island clam chowder. Chris is correct. Rhode Island is clear.
I said mushrooms.
Mushrooms. And you said
clear.
Dana has not spent time on the East Coast.
No. Yeah.
So clear clam chowder. New Jersey uses bacon.
That's not for Delaware. Snooki.
I put
Snooki Chris for New Jersey. I couldn't think of it.
You put spray tan.
I put with sausage.
Oh.
Half point? Half point,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah. Yep.
Like, maybe half point.
Same book, different pages.
Yeah. Spray tan. Ew. Delaware. What makes Delaware clam chowder is salted pork cubes and quahog. Clams.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you put bacon.
I put bacon.
Close.
Yeah.
Tax benefits. This has become like a statement.
What do I know about
Delaware cheese clam chowder?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I had already used that sauce.
So Menorcan is a weird one. Menorcan is...
Dana put rocks.
I don't know. Island style.
You put...
Spicy or chili style.
And then you put... Onion. Chris said onion. So Menorcan... Is based on Menorca, Spain. Menorca. It's said that only two places eat Menorcan clam chowder, and that is Spain and Florida.
Because of the Spanish
influence.
Interesting.
Specifically, St. Augustine, the city of St. Augustine. And what makes Menorcan special is Spanish dátil pepper. So it is spicy.
Yay.
Spicy.
Wow. Colin's pretty good.
Hmm. Yeah. Lots of clam chowder.
Had New Jersey clam chowder? Apparently.
Spray tan.
I've had clam chowder with bacon a lot, but it was never ID'd for me as being...
So it seems like that area. So like New Jersey has bacon. Delaware has their own... Delaware has salted pork, but also a specific type of clam. So it seems like that region just likes putting pork products in their soup. All right. Well, let's take a trip to the West Coast California roll.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We California roll all the time. It's named after California. Was it invented by the Japanese or the Americans? Not sushi, the California roll.
The California roll.
Which is...
So just for clarification.
Rice.
A Japanese person living in America, would you count that as...
That would be Japanese. Or American person living in Japan would be American.
Okay.
For those who are not familiar, California roll is a sushi roll... That is rice on the outside, and that has imitation crab meat, avocado.
This is hard because I feel like I knew the answer, and then I was like, but maybe that was wrong, and now
I inceptioned myself. Chris puts Japanese. Dana says American. Colin says Japanese. This is a trick question. It is invented in America by a Japanese chef in L.A.
Okay. That's what I thought.
That was your rules.
So Japanese. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Japanese chef in Los Angeles in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, that early.
And very early, post-war. And the thing is, why the substitution or these ingredients? One thing is because Americans might have an aversion with nori, which is the seaweed. Kind of weird that
also,
it's like...
Also, the imitation crab meat is cooked.
It's cooked already. It's not raw fish.
Also, prevalence of avocados.
It's very California. And also, it's also to give it that rich, like the fatty tuna taste without the raw fish. And also the rice on the outside because we're more...
I never thought about that. Rice. Put the scary seaweed on the inside.
Yeah, exactly. California roll, actually invented in California, but by a Japanese person. Not entirely a
Japanese person who lives in America for Americans.
That's true. Potato chips. Potato chips were invented in what state?
Oh,
this comes up all the time.
It is an American invention. Mm-hmm. It might have been inspired by other things that exist, the fried things, but this dish in particular. What state?
feel like we've talked about this before.
All right. Dana says New York. Chris says New York.
Oh, okay.
Colin says New York 99%. I like how you put your comment.
99%.
Yeah.
Potato chips invented at the Moon Lake Lodge in Saratoga Springs, New York. Yay. In 1853 by Chef George Crumb. And the legend is...
Yeah.
Out of spite.
Yes, it was made out of spite. So in the olden days, French fries were actually not like a fast food. It was kind of like a fancy food. You know, it's fried in duck fat or whatever. It's, you eat it off a plate with knife and fork. And this one customer said, you know what? My fries are a little bit cut too thick, so send it back to the kitchen. And so they remade it with thinner fries, and then he sent it back again and was like, this is still too thick. And so George Crumb, the chef, was like, okay, well, you wanted thin chips. Took a potato, sliced it so thin that you can't even, like, use a fork to pick it up because it's so thin and it's fried crispy. Mm-hmm. And it turns out it was a hit. And this was...
Some of the greatest inventions come from, like, fights between who can be the bigger a-hole. Like, I'm going to send back my potatoes twice. Yeah. And the chef's like, smack potatoes.
Word caught on, and Mr. Herman Lay, a traveling salesman, started selling these out of a plastic bag. Eventually, of course, Lay's Corporation...
Yeah. Yeah.
Then joined with Frito, becoming Frito-Lay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Key lime pie.
Yeah.
Key yummy.
Key lime pie.
Delicious.
What color is traditional key lime pie?
Oh.
Famous from the Key West, the Floridian area. Key lime pie. What color should key lime pie be? Everybody's correct. Everyone put yellow. Yes, it is not green. It is not lime green or mint green or super green. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to put food coloring in it. and the juice of the key lime and the rind will have like a creamy, like yellowish green tinge, but should not look fake. Yeah. Key lime pie. So the invention of key lime pie is, it's not like, oh, condensed milk is a substitution for fresh cream. No, like key lime pie was made
With
condensed milk. And this is the reason why in that area in the Florida Keys, there are a lot of sailors. The heat and the sun and the weather, dairy, fresh dairy is very hard to keep.
Yeah. Sure.
And so when condensed milk was invented, it was almost a couple years after invented, it was super popular in areas where food might be scarce or extreme weather or sailors on a ship. And the science of key lime pie is you don't cook key lime pie. You don't bake
it. Right. It just sets.
So how weird is you have like goopy condensed milk and you have key lime juice and all of a sudden you have like this kind of like creamy custard mousse. It's because of a chemical reaction of the acid in the key lime.
It's the same reaction as like, there's a way like lemon and cream will curdle in your tea.
Yeah. The acid will cook the enzyme, like quote cook. And that's how it thickens naturally.
Huh.
But current key lime pies mostly are made from Tahitian lime or Persian lime, not real key limes. Key limes are actually pretty hard to find.
Thanks,
Stuart. I'm so hungry now.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And there you go. Some a little tour of American cool. eats.
Nice.
And trivia now, behind it.
Delaware-style key lime pie has chunks of sausage right in there.
Salted pork.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
Hello. It is I, Ponbot 3000. I like puns, and I like Warby Parker. So I have embedded puns in the following Warby Parker message. It is time to be spectacular. Put a lid on fussy glasses shopping. True efficiency can be found at Warby Parker. They have a cornucopia of smart styles. Iris, I had multiple head modules so I can wear all of them, even though I am an Android and have perfect vision. Anyways, head over to warbyparker.com/brain, and with free expedited shipping, they won't arrive a day late. Can you believe it?
Well, I'm ready to go. Yeah. I can give you guys a quiz right now.
Oh, okay. I thought you were ready to go have some pie.
Well, yeah. No. I have a fun twist on the music quiz for you, and that is that we often ask, we play a clip of music, and we ask for the name of the artist. In this case, I'm going to tell you who the artist is performing every one of these songs. He is, I'm sure, a favorite of all of us here at Good Job Brain. Maybe a lot of you guys. One of the greatest musicians the world has ever known, Mr. Weird Al Yankovic.
Okay.
Weird Al Yankovic, known as the absolute master of the parody song, of taking someone else's mm-hmm. song and rewriting the lyrics and performing it himself quite well. His live shows are, they're like 3 hours long.
Whoa.
And he changes his costume for every song.
Wow.
So when he performs Fat, his parody of Michael Jackson's Bad, he gets dressed up in the full-on Fat suit makeup for that performance.
Just that one song.
Out of a Weird Al show, it is like, I cannot believe how hard this guy works.
That's awesome.
Yes. It is a two-part music quiz, and you're actually going to be writing down your answers, because this is what I want from you guys. I'm going to ask you, who was the original artist that performed the song that Weird Al Yankovic is parodying?
Mm-hmm.
And then also, the title of the Weird Al version of the song, which should be determinable from the title of the original and the subject matter of Weird Al's version. Okay. So it's 2 points. So, I will give you the Weird Al song, we will listen to it, and you will try to determine A, the artist that performed the original, and B, the title of Weird Al's parody version.
Okay.
Each one of them will be some kind of playful spin on the title of the original song. They are guessable. So here is clip number one.
I recall the time they found those fossilized mosquitoes, and before long they were cloning DNA. Now I'm being chased by some irate velociraptors.
Oh, man,
original artist. Yes,
I know the song.
It's a little bit of a tricky one. He is best known to our nation's children, the original artist of the original version of the song.
Okay.
Best known to our nation's children as an actor.
Okay.
As an actor who may have appeared in one or two of their favorite movies of the 21st century.
All right.
That is your only hint. If that jogs your memory, then you knew it somewhere. It was somewhere in your punch bowl. If it doesn't, then it wasn't in your punch bowl, and you get no points. I am going to have to call this at some point.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I know the song. I don't know. I can't know the artist. Yep. Yeah.
So, Karen says Jurassic Park. Colin says Jurassic Park. Dana says Ringo Starr. So the song is Jurassic Park. It is a parody of the song MacArthur Park. The first person to record MacArthur Park was Richard Harris, who later in life would play Albus Dumbledore in the Harry Potter movies.
Wow.
He was the first person to record it. Well-known Donna Summer's disco version, but she was not the original artist. Question.
It was Richard Harris.
Yeah. First recorded Jurassic Park.
He's a singer?
Yeah.
Wow.
A Renaissance man.
Yes. Clip number two.
One that won't try to bite. One that won't chew a hole in my socks. One that won't quack all night. One that won't try to bite. One that won't chew a hole in my socks. One that won't quack all night.
Again, should be guessable from the original version and the context of the lyrics. Colin has his answer up. Dana has her answers up. Karen says Huey Lewis and what, the power of Dove?
Dove.
Colin similarly says Huey Lewis in the News and I Want a New Duck.
That's
and Dana says Huey Lewis in the News and Duck.
It's like, I don't know.
I would have to, so the person who is the rightest, is Colin. That is in the, so you were all corrected as Huey Lewis in the News, and the song title is I Want a New Duck.
That's it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the song was I Want a New Drug by Huey Lewis in the News and I Want a New Duck. And he sings about how he wants a different
one
duck
that
than the one,
quack
one that won't quack all night. Indeed.
Yeah.
Again, these are the good ones, folks. All right, here we go.
Okay.
Clip number three.
Potato skins, potato cakes, hash browns, and instant flakes. Baked or boiled, or French fried, there's no kind you haven't tried.
Colin, I'm pretty sure, has it. Karen says, question mark, question mark.
Yes.
Dana says, blank, and slave to potato. Really circling it. Colin is correct. It is Robert Palmer who originally did the song Addicted to Love. Weird Al Yankovic's version is called Addicted to Spuds.
Okay.
It's hard to tell for me like, what the original song was. Like, I'm sure if you play it a longer, then I was like, oh, it's also 80s.
Clip number...
Yeah, very 80s. Those last two,
Clip number four. This is very 90s. This next song is very 90s.
Go to the store. Carry some money.
I will do it one more time. You can listen to the lyrics. Karen has it. Colin thinks he has it. One more time. We're going to listen.
Go to the store. Carry some money. That help you buy more. The tab is there to open the can. The can is there to hold it.
Oh.
Dana says R.E.M. and Colin says R.E.M. and Spam. Karen says R.E.M. and Can. Yes, it is the R.E.M. song Stand, and then the parody version
Stand
is Spam. The tab is there to open the can. Here is another one. We had this back in the day and listened to this probably more than the original. But do you recall the original? And importantly, do you recall the artist who did this? This is One Hit Wonder.
Yeno. You see, I just gotta have a tostada, carne asada. That's right, I want the whole enchilada. My only addiction has to do with a flour tortilla. I need a quesadilla. I love to stuff my face.
Wow. Man, firing neurons in my brain that have not been tickled years there.
Man. So, yes, Dana says Gerardo Taco Suave. Colin says Gerardo Taco Grande. Karen says Rico Suave Taco Grande. Giving people as many points as possible. Yes, the title of the Weird Al version is Taco Grande, based on the song Rico Suave by Gerardo. So I think everybody got at least a point there.
Okay.
Just two more in this quiz. Wow. Just two more.
All right.
Run, run. Hurts me to walk anywhere. Went to see my physician, Dr. Jones. He took my trousers off. Told me to cough.
I got
a lot of specific language in there relating to a medical ailment. Karen says, question mark, question mark.
Like
Colin
prostate?
Says, cool in the gang, nothing. Dana says, James Brown, nothing. The song is James Brown's Livin' in America.
Oh.
Weird Al Yankovic's version. The doctor took my trousers off and told me to cough, and I might have to wear a truss because he's living with a hernia.
Yeah,
living with a hernia.
I remember that now. Yeah.
I'm thinking like prostate.
And
then I was like, what does that have to do with disc? Like the disc of a back?
Right.
I'm realizing now that the only part of the James Brown song that I can really say is the living in America.
Right,
but it's like,
right,
you obviously can't play that. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, all right.
Nice.
I was like, sounds like somebody imitating James Brown.
Yeah.
That's what that was like.
All right. Final audio clip. This is your moment for a comeback. Yes.
Okay.
Here we go. This is the hardest one. Sorry. This song is a duet. Two artists originally performed the original song. It is simply Weird Al Yankovic on the recording, however.
Okay.
So you're going to write down two artist names, 1 point each.
All right.
1 point each.
All right.
Real moment for some comebacks here. I don't know who's in the lead or whatever, but yeah, okay.
I think Colin.
Here we go. Okay, we'll say it's Colin. All right. Okay. Two artists and one Weird Al parody song name. Here we go.
Back again, my car was gone, Will. I didn't know it was a loading zone. What a bummer, I was so brought down. I had to chase that tow truck all over town.
Songs I'm familiar with.
I'm trying to think, like, who's he imitating? Okay. I'm trying to think, like, man.
He's not imitating the artist's
just yes.
Well, it's hard.
Okay. Well, not looking so good. Dana says Cyndi Lauper and Rick Springfield. I'm glad that you're guessing, because maybe you got one of them, but you didn't.
Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson.
Yeah, not so much. And Karen says ? The song itself was Stop Dragging My Heart Around, which was originally performed by Tom Petty and Stevie Nicks. It was a big duet hit for the two of them. Weird Al Yankovic's parody version, of course, is Stop Dragging My Car Around. Yelling it to a tow truck.
And he's got
to
go all over.
Man, these are 80-centric Weird Al. No Chamillionaire, no...
All right.
That was good. That was appropriately tough. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Maybe the parents in the car did better than the kids on that one. You know,
I don't think the kids even know who Weird Al is.
What? No, Weird Al is still as relevant as he. Okay, well, all right. Okay, but look, well, with the internet.
Yeah.
All right. This is going to be easier for everybody. I'll take it down a notch. So the other day I was polishing my nails, and I noticed that the word polish and Polish, like I've thought this before, but they're spelled the same way, but they are pronounced totally differently.
Mm-hmm. True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nail polish, not nail not nail polish, not nail polish.
Or yes. Polish sausages.
Yeah, polish sausages, totally. That's called a heteronym.
Yeah.
And so it's words that are written identically but have a different pronunciation and meaning. Oh. So this is a quiz about heteronyms.
Oh. Heteronyms. Right. Bring me the police remover of Nail.
Yeah.
Nail.
I'll give you two definitions. Two definitions.
Oh.
And then you give me the word.
The word, right. The, pair, the spelling.
It's a word game.
It's a word game. So you guys buzz in when you have the answer. So this will be a bit of a speed round, because I think you're going to get it quickly. All right. First question. A knot tied with two loops and two loose ends, or to bend the head or the upper part of the body?
Bow and bow.
Yeah. Well, should we at least wait for the question? Oh, okay. All right.
No, we can't. Yeah.
All right. To plant a seed or a female pig? Karen.
Sow and sow.
Yes.
She hadn't said pig yet.
Yeah, I know.
To be in charge or command of, or the chemical element of the atomic number 82. Colin.
Lead and lead.
Oh. Yes.
To abandon, or a dry, barren area of land.
To abandon
or a dry, barren area.
Colin. Desert and desert.
Oh. Nice.
Yep. Not legally recognized, or a person made weak or disabled by illness or injury. Colin.
Invalid and invalid. Nice.
Yes. Oh, I was thinking void. I was like, void. Yeah.
To move emotionally, or to pretend to have or feel something.
To move emotionally, or to pretend to have or feel something.
Mm-hmm. Karen.
Affect?
Yes. Affect and affect.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Effect.
Yes.
Affect and affect.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, nice.
Ugh. Low in pitch or a fish? Karen.
Bass and bass.
Yes. A farm machine that harvests and threshes, or to bring two or more things together?
Combine and combine.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. To strike, or a sideboard meal?
Say that again?
To strike, or a sideboard meal.
A sideboard meal?
Yeah. A meal on a sideboard.
Meal on a sideboard.
Mm-hmm. If you had meal laid out on the sideboard, like something like that.
Buffet and buffet.
Yes. Oh, yes. Wow. Nice. Yes. Mm-hmm. Wow.
To provide comfort from grief, or a control unit.
Console and console.
Yes.
Nice.
A bird, or to have plunged deeply downward.
Plunged deeply downward.
Deeply downward. Karen.
No, I'm wrong.
Colin.
Dove and dove.
Yes.
Oh.
Last one. A small motorcycle, or to have been dejected and apathetic. Colin.
Moped and moped.
Oh.
Yes.
Moped.
Good job.
I learned something today.
That was a good quiz.
It's good.
That was fun.
It's good.
Moped. I never. I guess when you're reading it, maybe, but when you're saying it, you're like, in context,
It's sort of related to, like, to this day, I always read it as mizzled when I see misled.
Oh, misled.
M-I-S-L-E-D. I'm like, he mizzled him. He mizzled him. What? Oh, misled. That's right. I know this word. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody, it was Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the head of the Democrat Party, the chairperson, said that on TV at some point. She was like, we don't want to be misled by these people. She's like,
no.
That's what happens when you read a word your whole life.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Misled.
And we got one last quizzy quiz.
I will close us out with a quiz called Where's the Original? This is going to be a quiz about place names. We have a lot of cities, countries, states, places in the world with new in front of them. This is a question for you about where's the original, where's the old. So if I were to say, I know you know the city of New York, but where is original York? I would accept. I'll accept that. Right.
Oh,
exactly.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's right.
Well, you know, I mean, be more specific if you can. Mainly, I'll accept it because it's right.
Oh, okay. You don't want us to say planet Earth for everyone.
Yeah. Right.
The solar system.
The northern hemisphere. Right. I narrowed it down for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Buzz in when you're ready.
Okay.
And no trick questions or anything.
Okay.
Like, there wasn't a.
I know you know the city of New Orleans. But where is original Orleans? That was all together?
France.
It is France. Yes, Orleans. That's right. Orleans, right. Orleans. And it's sort of indirect. It's named after the Duke of Orleans.
So it's
who takes his name from the region in France. I know you know the country New Zealand.
Yeah.
But where is original Zealand?
They don't know.
Is it Belgium?
It is not
Brussels.
Belgium.
Brussels is a city.
Wait, that is...
think about who were some of the early... Yeah, Karen.
Netherlands? No.
Yes. Netherlands. Yeah, yes.
I'm a genius. You
are. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's totally right.
So Abel Tasman, after whom Tasmania was named, he was Dutch. He was sort of the first European to sight New Zealand. He gave it a name originally that was later changed to New Zealand after the Dutch province of Zeeland. So this is our New Zealand. I know you know the Canadian province of New Brunswick, but where is original Brunswick?
Ooh. New Jersey. New Brunswick.
And this one this one's not a trick, but it's a little tricky. Chris.
Germany.
It is Germany.
Wow. Yeah, with Brunswick. You know, it just sounded.
Brunswick.
Brunswick. Yeah.
I'll give you, you're right for the wrong reason.
Okay, great. I'll take it.
It's named after Braunschweig, which you may have heard of. Braunschweig, which was anglicized into Brunswick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I always thought it sounded so English.
Yeah, I thought it was in guess England.
Yeah, so it was originally in Lower Saxony. It's modern day Germany.
I like Rhines.
It sounds German. Yeah. It sounds vaguely German.
Wow. Well,
Brunhilde.
You got it.
Brunhilde. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Quick quiz. Last question. Here we go.
Whoa.
Yeah.
A lot
of these are England. Yeah.
I know you know New Mexico, but where's original Mexico?
That could have been your your sample.
Is it Mexico?
Well, what about Jersey?
Oh, sorry. Two more. I know you know the state of New Hampshire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where is original Hampshire? Chris?
England.
It is England.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hampshire County. Yeah.
Shire.
I don't want us to... Yeah.
Hampshire.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. And last one. Quick quiz. Here we go. Last one. I know you know the state of New Jersey.
Oh.
Here we go.
But where is original Jersey?
Wow. It's like, it must have changed its name.
Jersey.
England.
Poland?
No. Not Poland. This is not a trick, but tricky.
Amsterdam?
Jersey.
Netherlands?
France?
Belgium.
Jersey.
Like, J is a weird...
Wait, has no one said it yet? Karen,
no one,
her
no one said it yet.
Said
no
it.
One said
oh,
it
I'm,
yet.
Oh, I'm just...
Okay. Jersey.
France.
I think when I say you'll remember.
Oh.
Chris, take a guess.
Egypt.
No, it is the colony, the New Jersey colony, was named after the Isle of Jersey, which is in the Channel Islands and is an independent region.
Whoa.
Yes. Huh. It is a bailiwick of Jersey. This is one of my favorite terms, the bailiwick. It's connected historically with the UK. Like, they're sort of on the hook to defend Jersey, you know, militarily.
Jersey.
Okay. But they are autonomous. They rule themselves.
No,
yes. The Isle of Jersey in the Channel Islands, off the coast of Normandy, France.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The English Channel. Got it.
Yep. I had always assumed it was just, again, like everything else in New England, somewhere in England proper, but
in
no.
New England.
No. Yeah. No. Jersey's Jersey is, they call it a crown dependency. So, like, Isle of Man is a
crown.
Isle of Man. Yeah. Guernsey, also a crown dependency. So, it's sort of in this weird quasi.
Oh, the Guernsey's over there.
Those are different. Oh. Those are more closely tied to the UK.
Are they do they count as being in the UK? No.
They've worded this so specifically. Yes. It is a possession of the crown in right of Jersey.
What?
Wow.
It is a crown dependency. But they have their own identity on the world stage. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about Newfoundland? Foundland.
So a lot of
isn't that like literally like found this?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Newfoundland.
Oh my God.
Newfoundland.
Newfoundland.
That we was newly found.
That's so cool.
I mean, I made that up, but I'm guessing that's true.
Newhousetown.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, maybe related to that, looking into a lot of the eastern cities, like New Haven, there's no Old Haven. It was just
like a
New Haven where they were founding,
yeah, right.
Newark, New Jersey, there was no old Ark. It was just, this is our new Ark, like Ark of the Covenant.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I like how it's one word.
Yeah.
Right.
New Ark. I guess New Ark is a lot harder to say than Newark.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so cool.
All right, well done.
Oh my God, Newfoundland.
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 But you're supposed to pronounce it Newfoundland, right?
Yeah.
Not Newfoundland.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Wow. And okay. All right, and that's our all quiz number 32. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you had a lot of fun. Hope you're gonna be like me and I'm gonna look up a bunch of new cities and new places now. I'm sure there's a whole list.
Oh well,
I'm just gonna go in all of them.
There are maybe fewer hard ones than you think. A lot of them are just obvious.
England,
but still,
to see like how many of
it is interesting.
How many there are?
Yeah, yeah.
And don't forget, Good Job Brand Live tickets are on sale. You can go to our site or you can go to bit.ly/GJBLive to get tickets, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.